For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
In many unsolved cases, we often find that police didn't do their due diligence. Either evidence wasn't properly collected, witnesses weren't interviewed or questioned, or maybe they just honed in on one suspect, entirely sure they don't need to look into someone else. Sometimes cases are, of course, unsolved because of lack of evidence. But the case I bring to you today definitely isn't unsolved because of that. The twists and turns in the aftermath of the crime will leave you questioning our justice system yet again. This is the Austin Yogurt Shop Murders. Welcome to another intriguing episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where all the realms of true crime, supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Jordan.
I'm Matt.
We're ready to plunge into today's fascinating mysteries. Let's dive right in. On December 6th, 1991, two teenage girls, Eliza Thomas and Jennifer Harbison, were working at a frozen yogurt shop called I Can't Believe It's Yogurt. They were scheduled to close the store that night. Jennifer's 15-year-old sister, Sarah, had come in to wait for a ride from her sister and had brought her 13-year-old friend, Amy Ayers, with her. Around 10 p.m., a man came inside, ordered a can of soda, and asked to use the restroom. Another couple in the restaurant noted that he and another man, who also only ordered a drink, were acting very odd. They seemed anxious and even a little angry, but the couple left before they closed the doors at 11. The men were still inside. Around midnight, a fire was spotted coming from the building, and assuming everyone was out, the firemen blasted the space with water. When they went inside, they found the four girls in the storage area in the back, naked, tied up, and they had been shot in the head.
I'm not gonna lie. All I could think about is, I can't believe it's not butter.
That's pretty much what everyone goes to be honest. It was a frozen yogurt store, which apparently a lot of people expected some sort of kitchen fire, and that kind of blows my mind a little bit. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they do use some sort of equipment back there that could cause a fire, but I don't know. My brain just automatically goes to refrigeration.
Where was this at?
Austin, Texas.
Okay. See, I don't know about Austin, but I know, like, up north, the places, you know, that have, like, ice cream shops and frozen yogurt shops, they often will have other kind of, you know, food items with them. They'll have like hamburgers and stuff like that. But on the other hand, you know, ice cream machines definitely can start on fire. I mean, anything with electricity can.
Yeah, and that does make sense. And it was after midnight. I understand why everybody just went in. They're like, oh, shoot, kitchen fire. Got to put this out. It really sucks because they all went in and the crime scene was just completely tampered. Like, everybody stepped on everything, especially like a lot of evidence was quite literally washed away with water from the hoses. I mean, there wasn't a lot of evidence anyway because of the fire itself, but oh, it was just awful to begin with.
I don't understand, like, okay, so there was a fire, firefighters came. Did they not even go inside and check to see if anybody was in there, or did they just instantly go to putting out the fire?
No, it was well after close, and the store was, like, completely blacked out. They had assumed everybody had already left.
Yeah, but, I mean, still, I'm not a firefighter, but you would think that their first thing would be to go in and try to see if anybody's in there. Because I do know one thing, once they start spraying that water, it basically turns it into steam, which will kill anything instantly that's in there. But, you know, I don't know. It seems like they should have at least checked everything first before they started putting it out.
There's just a lot of things in this case that one way or another went horribly wrong. Just a whole lot. And this was just like the tip of the iceberg.
That's an understatement.
Because, like I said, once they got back there, they went in, and that's when they realized, like, you could tell in the front of the building, it looked like nobody was there. The front had been completely closed down, you know, all the chairs and everything were put up, which I'm sure made it look like there was nobody inside. But they had all been put into, like, a storage room in the very back, and that's where they found them.
I don't know. It's weird to me, I guess. So, I don't know. We'll see what I think, because I've never heard of this case, which keeps surprising me that Jordan keeps finding cases that I've never heard of.
After further examination, at least one of the girls had been raped, and Amy had been shot twice, the first shot to the head not killing her. There were two separate guns used, a .22 and a .38 caliber. At this point, as you can imagine, a lot of the evidence was lost to the fire, but they were able to get some DNA evidence from the rape. But in the 90s, DNA evidence was not what it is now, and they were only able to obtain a partial strand. And here is where the investigation goes a little off the rails. Over 50 false confessions were recorded in this case, one of which was a serial killer named Kenneth McDuff. But his sequence of events did not match, and he was ruled out. Now, truthfully, I'm not quite sure how detectives came up with these four men, but eventually, they found these men who were teenagers at the time. Robert Springsteen, Michael Scott, Maurice Pierce, and Forrest Wellborn. While two of them confessed, I say that in air quotes, after hours of questioning, one of them literally with a gun to his head, confessed. They did maintain their innocence at trial. Unfortunately, both of them were deemed guilty. Fortunately for them, in later years, when DNA was tested against theirs and found not to match, they were released.
All right, follow-up questions. You said this was back in the 90s.
Yes, it happened in 91.
And there was four girls that died?
Yes. 17, 17, 15, and 13.
So obviously there's going to be multiple people. The fact that there was two guns used. But how did they come up with the four guys?
I'm going to be honest. I have looked everywhere. And basically, from what I can tell, and this is a from what I can tell kind of thing. One of them eventually was questioned, and each of them in turn more or less said the other person did it, but they didn't. So, you know, Robert Springsteen was like, well, Michael, Maurice, and Forrest did it. And when they questioned Michael, he was like, well, Robert, Maurice, and Forrest did it. And so on and so forth. But I don't actually know how they got each of their names. I still can't entirely figure that out. They have kept this so close to the chest.
That's the problem. You know, we can obviously see how they interrogated them. Of course, somebody's going to confess, you know. And there's another case that I want to do eventually. It's about the Icelandic confessions. I think we've talked about it before on here, where they basically were put in solitary confinement and then they were questioned relentlessly, basically tortured at the hands of the police. And eventually they got the confessions that they wanted. We know that that's fact, that when someone is tortured, basically, they're going to confess to whatever you want them to. My guess is any information that they get, that they actually gave to prove that confession, you know, was probably given to them by the police, because that's the thing that is very common. I think I've said it before, I'm not a huge fan of confessions, especially when the interrogation takes hours upon hours. The longer the interrogation takes, the more likely it's a, you know, coerced confession.
Well, no, and I agree. And here's the thing. There were witnesses that they spoke to, that the police spoke to, that had witnessed the two, and I quote, men that were in there that night. And none of these four, who were teenagers at the time of the actual murders, didn't match any of those descriptions. So on top of that, we have these four teenagers who don't actually match any descriptions. They didn't match anything close to the age of the quote-unquote men who were supposedly in their 30s at the time. And furthermore, you've got them literally coerced into a false confession. Thankfully, they were smart enough to go back on that confession at trial, even though they were unfortunately guilty, according to the jury. But then later on, of course, they actually had DNA matched. And I will say this, they don't have the full DNA component yet, but they have enough to run it and test it against somebody. And it was enough to prove it was not a match. So of course they were released, but like, I would think enough to be like, it, none of this clearly matches.
They did run the DNA later on, I'm assuming.
Oh, we're about to get to that.
Okay. Well, then I'll hold my questions on that. So I'm going to piss a lot of people off, and I don't really care. This is 100% of the reason why I'm against the death penalty. Not necessarily, you know, the moral implications or anything like that. It's because I don't fucking trust the police enough to, you know, get somebody 100% without coercion, without friggin' torture. Because we've had so many cases, like, this is not a one-off case. I mean, we could honestly probably spend, you know, the next 5 years doing cases of police basically forcing confessions. And, you know, that's the whole reason, is I just don't trust them. I mean, they want to get a conviction. That's all they care about. We've talked about this before. I don't understand, like, if someone in my family was murdered, I would want to know who actually killed him. I don't want somebody just to go to prison for it. I want to know who actually killed him, and I want them to be punished. I don't want some random person being punished. Like, to me, that is such a disservice to the victim and the victim's family. I don't get it. Like, why is this even a thing?
I would also really like to know, because it doesn't make any sense to me either. Don't get me wrong, I understand that, yes, they are under pressure to solve the case, but actually solve the case. Don't just throw somebody else in prison for this, because that's not going to fix the problem.
No, and it's not going to do justice for the victim or the families. I mean, I don't understand it at all. Like, you know, people are so quick to someone to go to jail. I mean, great, but make sure it's the right person. If you, I don't know, I could sit here and talk about this all day. It's simple. And this is Texas, and it, you know, four girls got murdered, so it's probably a death penalty case. Which, judging by the look on your face, we're probably going to get into that later, right?
We'll get into something.
Gotta love Texas, I guess.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Here's what I find incredibly interesting. While they were able to test the DNA against the four men, the government will not release the DNA to be tested further. The two men in the shop until after close were most likely the men responsible for the murders, and investigators have never been able to find out who they are. But if given the DNA, they could try using familial matches to find the culprit. Using familial DNA is fairly new, but it has been used to catch killers before, the biggest and most well-known being the Golden State Killer. Basically, you can use the DNA to trace a family line, finding the person responsible. But the FBI will not release it, citing anonymity law.
Okay. So, I do got a lot to say on this one. And, okay, so this is a very slippery slope here. I definitely would like to find the killer in cases. I don't know. I just have a hard time justifying using the familiar match thing. And it just, I don't know. It feels too icky, I guess, if that makes sense.
See, not to me. I get it. Like, I'm over here, like, if there's somebody in my family line that could track that down, like, do it right now.
Yeah, but then you get into conversations that did that person get consent to giving his DNA to be used in that way? You'd have to justify, because you can't just take people's DNA. You have to have a court order. You have to get it legally in some way. They could have been arrested and you could get the DNA that way. But the point is, you have to get it legally. So that comes into question. If you get it from someone else, would that technically be legal? And I think there's just a lot of questions that haven't been answered that they need to answer before I'd feel safe saying that's a good idea. Because I'm not, I'm trying to explain this and I'm not doing a good job. But
no, I get what you're saying. I get it. It's a Freedom of Information Act kind of thing where you have not given your okay to have your DNA out there.
Yeah,
necessarily.
The slippery slope of it is, I can imagine this being used in nefarious ways. Say somebody, for instance, let's say someone's peacefully protesting and they're keeping their anonymity, whatever, I can't fucking say that word. But the government uses the familiar match to find out who that person is. I mean, there's a thousand scenarios you could put in there that let's say anonymous, they do a lot of good, not legally, but...
Touche.
But they definitely do a lot of good. So let's say the government uses their powers, they get DNA sample and they run it against somebody and they find out who someone from Anonymous is. Or it's too much power and there's too much slippery slopes, I would say.
See, I feel the other way around.
I feel like if you have committed a crime, and because we have so many DNA databases out there in general, now I know, obviously, you have so many just different random ones, and they don't automatically go into databases. Like, if you've got 23andMe, those don't automatically go into, like, the genealogy database. No. That's not how they work. But there are separate databases that you can enter into. And I think once you've committed some sort of crime, sorry, that's, you've done it. If your DNA is out there, you did it, and sorry, it's there for you. If you did the crime and your DNA is there, that's on you.
Yeah, but I mean, you still got the, does that violate their constitutional rights, though? And I would say that, yes, it probably does, because it's unlawful search and seizure. I don't know if that actually qualified, but like, whether they're good or bad, or people can use them to hide, we've got constitutional rights in this country. And I think that just goes a little too far for my liking.
I mean, but is it any different than your parents giving their DNA sample against yours?
But, I mean, that usually doesn't happen. And see, okay, so here's my problem with, like, familiar matches, for instance. Is it doesn't really, it tells you, like, it tells you basically if it's on your mom's side or your dad's side. I can tell you if it's a brother, sister, cousin, uncle, aunt, grandpa, whatever. But it doesn't narrow down any more than that. So it's still a fishing expedition, essentially, unless it's like a grandfather, obviously.
Kind of. The strand that they have is a Y strand, so it's only going to be the male members.
This one's a hard one for me because I like the results. I don't like the method, though, if that makes sense. I think there's too many questions that need to be answered. Like, is it constitutionally sound? Is it legal? Because obviously, not everybody who's in that genealogy database agree to be in it. Like, just because you give your DNA to, because I know there has been cases where, like, the ancestry and the 23andMe, and obviously there's a lot of conspiracy theories on that end. But I mean, where does it draw the line?
That's an interesting thought. I don't know. I'm on the other side where I'm like, if it's out there, it's out there. And if it helps us catch somebody who has brutally murdered 4 teenagers, screw it.
The other end of it is, I don't necessarily trust the police to be honest in that aspect either. So I think if we are going to do something like that, they need a separate, like, separate agency that deals with it that aren't police officers, like a separate crime lab or something.
That would be an interesting take on it. Maybe there is something like that we just don't know about.
There might be. I mean, crime labs are supposed to be separate from police. I have too many questions that haven't been answered yet, and I think they need to be addressed before I'll feel comfortable. Just because, like I said, it can be used, any of these technologies can be used in a good way or a bad way. And I don't think we've addressed the bad ways that they can be used.
That's fair. I still think it should be used. I can't imagine how the family feels when there is this technology out there that could be used to find all these people, especially poor Amy, who was just there literally to get a ride home for like a sleepover.
Yeah, but I get it. I just, like I said, I can't justify it. Because it is an invasion of privacy. I mean, it's not necessarily the cop's place to judge somebody. They got to gather the evidence. It's the court that's supposed to convict and judge somebody.
I mean, I think they are convicting themselves, though. They left their DNA at the scene.
Well, I'm not talking about that part. I'm just talking about running it against familiar matches. Like, that's the part that I have a problem with. Just because I just have too many questions on if it's even constitutionally allowed. Because they're not gathering that DNA with the court order. It's basically just a fishing expedition to run it against everything that they have in their database. So, I don't know. I got questions. I can see definitely police officers and government agents abusing that very much. Because who doesn't want to be anonymous in this day and age?
Fair. There are a lot of theories on this, including theories of the girls' own families being involved, theories of Austin PD being entirely corrupt and butchering the case on purpose, and of course, just that it was a simple robbery gone wrong. Now, Austin PD did butcher this case. The crime scene was not handled correctly, no matter how you look at it, but it is plausible that corruption was at the core. The other option is that they just didn't know how to properly handle a crime scene like that. Personally, I don't believe the girls' families were involved, just due to the witnesses and the fact that they are still investigating the case so many years later. The robbery gone wrong angle, there was still a bag of money under the register. If someone was robbing the store, they did take money from the register, but they missed the biggest bag. More than anything, I believe the two men saw an opportunity and took it and burnt down the evidence.
Okay, so I don't know enough about the families to rule them out, because unfortunately, it's very possible that one of their families could have been involved. Not saying that they are, because I don't know anything, so I can't give definitive one way or another. Now, I hate when you make me do this. I will play devil's advocate here and say that I don't necessarily think that the Austin PD is corrupt or even botched the crime scene, because during a fire, the crime scene was going to get botched anyways, because obviously they didn't know that it's a crime scene, but they still got to put the fire out. Fire departments don't change their protocol, don't change how things work, even if it is a crime scene.
Well, it wasn't about the fire department, though. It was about the PD.
I know, but here's the thing, though. Like, any kind of evidence that they could have recovered was probably going to be destroyed anyways from the fire, putting it out, the water. I'm actually kind of surprised, come to think of it, that they got any kind of DNA whatsoever, because obviously water is very bad for DNA. And when you put out a fire, you use a lot of water.
It was from the rape.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, I'm not going to go too much into that. But, so hold on. Did they figure out where the actual fire started from? You may have said that, but.
I know it was set. It wasn't an electrical fire. They actually set it, but I don't know how they set the fire.
See, now I'm confused. I mean, did they burn the bodies?
Yes.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. Oh, no, they did. I'm sorry. I remember. They set styrofoam cups on fire and tossed it onto the bodies. And the styrofoam cups then kind of dispersed and caught on other things in the storeroom, and everything went ablaze.
So anyway, so yeah, honestly, that's like why setting fire to a crime scene is probably the best method if you're ever a criminal. Not that I'm advocating for that at all, because it basically destroys the crime scene. You can't really get usable DNA, usable prints. So I'm not going to blame the Austin PD for that.
Well, the part that I say they botched was that there were a lot of things from evidence that were like missing, like the back door, like the handle. They believe that he left the back door propped open, and like the handle and stuff that was missing, like a bunch of stuff went just completely missing from the crime scene. That's the part that we believe was botched.
Like I said, you're not going to get a whole lot of friggin' usable evidence from a crime scene that's been burnt. Water is going to pretty much destroy everything. What the fire doesn't destroy.
Agreed entirely.
Now, let's say that the door did disappear. My question would it be any kind of useful evidence? Probably not. I hate when you make me do this.
It's my favorite, though.
Like, I like blaming the police, but I'm not going to blame the police when it's something that not really their fault or not in their control. And I think this is one of those times, because they're not going to get much evidence anyways from a crime scene that's been burnt. Fire department would probably pretty much destroy every bit of evidence that they could find, if there was any. Not saying that they didn't botch it in other ways. I'm just saying, as far as the crime scene goes, I don't think they really could have done anything differently. Like I said, I'm not going to rule out their family just because I don't know anything. Someone from their family could be involved. But it's a mystery.
The Austin Yogurt Shop murders may have happened 33 years ago, but the public still holds hope that the evidence we have will finally bring justice to the four young girls that lost their lives that day. The case, thankfully, is still being investigated, and hopefully, like many other cold cases, will find justice soon. Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. Your engagement is what makes this so rewarding. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more intriguing content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check us out on our links in the description below. Your involvement is the key to unlocking more thrilling mysteries.
As always, we keep you guessing.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.